Good morning. I'm Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 9 minutes past 7 o'clock on this Tuesday, March the 27th. Elizabeth Edwards made her first solo public appearance yesterday in Cleveland following the announcement of the return of her cancer and following her interview with her husband, John Edwards, on 60 Minutes on Sunday. She says the outpouring of sympathy she's received is making it easier to deal with the news that her cancer has reappeared in a rib and possibly her hip. And she said, "You can't stop when people are cheering for you." The decision by the Edwards to continue this presidential campaign is being met with cheers and some jeers. Here's a clip from the 60 Minutes interview with Katie Couric on Sunday.
Your decision to stay in this race has been analyzed and, quite frankly, judged by a lot of people. And some say what you're doing is courageous. Others say it's callous. Some say, isn't it wonderful they care for something greater than themselves? And others say it's a case of insatiable ambition. You say?
I say all of those judgments and questions are entirely legitimate. I mean, when you offer yourself up for service to the country as the President of the United States, you deserve to be evaluated. I am perfectly open to that evaluation.
So, how do you evaluate this? Courageous or callous? Unsatiable ambition or a greater calling? 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, toll free from anywhere, in Madison, 263-1890, 263-1890. You can also send your question or comment via email, talk@wpr.org. Please include your first name and your community with your email. We will talk with David Redlosk. He is an associate professor of political science at the University of Iowa. We'll talk about how the Edwards' personal struggle will affect their political lives, and we'll wonder what questions and thoughts you have about all of this. Professor Redlosk, good morning.
Good morning, Joy.
Thanks again for being with us.
Happy to.
We did a very, very unscientific, unofficial straw poll in our last segment on this program, and John Edwards was the victor in that straw poll. You did a scientific poll, and the results are hot off the press. What are the results of this?
They are. A colleague of mine, Carolyn Tolbert, and I were in the field with a poll. We had been starting polling the Monday before the Edwards announcement. this means we collected data both before and after the announcement on Thursday. And what we find is that among likely caucus goers in Iowa, this is an Iowa poll, Edwards' support actually strengthened a little bit from 30% to 36% among those most likely to caucus. At the same time, Hillary Clinton's support also increased from 24% to 34%. So what we find is that before the announcement, Edwards was leading in the among caucus goers. And following the announcement, he continues to lead at this point. This includes polling through Sunday night.
Yeah. Now, this was just a general question, just asking who do you support?
Right. That was the who do you support question. We can take advantage, in a sense, of the fact that something happened in the middle of the polling, and we can look at the people who answered before that happened and the people who answered afterwards. We also asked a question after Thursday's announcement, simply seeing whether people thought the announcement would make it more or less likely that John Edwards would win the nomination. And interestingly enough, the Iowa public seemed to be pretty evenly split on that. About 30% of our respondents think it will actually make it more likely that he will win, and about 34% think it's less likely that he will win. I think what it really says is that, you know, we're really not sure at this point what the impact of this announcement is going to be.
Yeah. There is another poll in the news this morning, USA Today, a Gallup poll, saying that Americans by 2-1 support the decision by John Edwards to stay in the Democratic presidential race, even though his wife has had this reoccurrence of cancer. Your take on that?
I'm not really surprised about that. I think to a great extent, much of this has been handled very sympathetically, at least by the mainstream media. I think where you see sniping going on to the extent that there's any going on, it's mostly in the blogs. It's mostly in environments that most Americans actually don't pay close attention to unless it's brought to their attention. I think in most cases, if we think about the television coverage, if we think about the newspaper coverage, a lot of it has been quite supportive, and I think Americans' responses are reflecting that.
We are talking about the decision by John and Elizabeth Edwards to continue his presidential campaign after it was learned Elizabeth's breast cancer had spread to her bones. We wonder what questions you have about this, what thoughts you have about this, whether you think this was the right choice or not, or how it makes you view John Edwards as a presidential candidate now. 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. In Madison, 263-1890. We are talking with David Redlosk. He is an associate professor of political science at the University of Iowa. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio at 17 minutes past 7 o'clock on this Tuesday, March the 27th. Coming up this afternoon between 4 and 6, it's At Issue with Ben Marins. Household incomes are dropping faster in Wisconsin than any other state. Ben's guest after 5 says it's not the economy, but a social and demographic shift that put Wisconsin at the bottom of the list. We'll find out more about that during At Issue with Ben Marins after 5 o'clock this afternoon. We're talking presidential politics during this hour and talking specifically about presidential hopeful John Edwards and his wife Elizabeth announcing that she has had a reoccurrence of cancer, but that his campaign will go on. We're talking about whether he made the right decision, whether his family's personal struggle will turn into a political one, what this might mean for his presidential bid. And wondering how this has changed your view, if at all, of John Edwards as a presidential candidate. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. Our guest is David Redlosk. He is an associate professor of political science at the University of Iowa. And polling that he has done shows that John Edwards is still a strong candidate in Iowa. And talk just a little bit more about that, Professor Redlosk, before we go to the phones. I mean, for the most part, I've heard that John Edwards has been ahead in Iowa from all of these polls.
He has been, and part of that is because, of course, he did very well here, coming in second in 2004. And he's been here ever since. There's people sort of joke that he almost moved in after the 2004 election. Mm-hmm. We saw Edwards a lot. He's got the most extensive ground operation, the most extensive staffing of any of the candidates so far, and they're very, very active in shoring up and building on the support they had last time. So most polling has pretty consistently put Edwards at least a couple points ahead of Clinton in terms of Iowa support. It's important when anybody looks at polling in Iowa to recognize that polling of registered voters in general tends to say Clinton's a little bit ahead. But, you know, when we're talking about what matters in Iowa, it's going to be the Iowa caucuses in January, and about 20 to 25% of each party will come out to caucus that night for a couple of hours. And it's polling those likely caucus goers that's more important and turns out to be very hard to do. But any poll that tries to determine likely caucus goers has been showing Edwards on top rather than Hillary Clinton.
And we will go to the phones. Jessica in Fond du Lac. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi. I just wanted to make a comment. I'm not for or against Edwards necessarily, but I myself have cancer, and I think that the idea that it's that he might be exploiting his wife in some way is ridiculous, that he could actually do that as a human being. You know, it might be too much for him to handle this and being president, but for him to be doing anything, you know, exploitive towards his wife is just ridiculous, and that's all I wanted to say.
Yeah. That was the question that Katie Couric posed, saying some say this is being, I don't know if she used the word exploiting your wife, but looking for the sympathy vote or something like that, Professor Redlawsk.
Right. Mm-hmm. I mean, this. I think Jessica's point is one that people are, in fact, debating, and there is a natural, let's say, cynicism about politics. There's a natural tendency among folks these days to begin to think that everything a politician does is posturing and setting him or herself up just to look better in some fashion or another. So it's almost natural that there would be at least some question like this. Could this be that he's simply trying to exploit a situation to get that sympathy vote, if such a thing were to exist? And I think the result is it's generated very strong responses among people. People, for example, Jessica, who have cancer themselves, I think if you read the blogs, you see real splits on this. But in my mind, at least, Elizabeth Edwards herself really makes clear the kinds of choices that she faces, and for better or for worse, the choice that she wants to see her husband take at this stage of things, at least, is to move forward and continue to seek the presidency. And I suspect most people sort of respect that and understand that.
Yeah. And didn't she say something along the lines of, I don't want my legacy to be that I stopped my husband, this great man, from serving his country?
Right. Absolutely. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I mean, the two of them are clearly a team. And I think here in Iowa, certainly because we see these candidates so up close and personal, I think we've seen that they're very much a team, that it's, you're getting both of them. And, you know, she clearly doesn't want that to be, you know, what happens here, no matter what happens to her.
Laura in Muscadet, hi, you're on the air.
Hi. Actually, your speaker just addressed my point. What I see is not his making a decision, but they're making a decision. And maybe that's a reflection of the changing, but the strong candidates seem to have a life partner who also is strong, instead of the old 1950s and earlier traditional role of the strong man and the nice wife. We're seeing, you know, women who are well-trained, whether they're the candidate and their husbands are trained or vice versa. And I'm not offended when I see them say, we made a choice.
Mm-hmm. Professor Redlaw,
it is an interesting use of language, and I sort of think back over the years, both just in terms of, you know, personal experience as well as reading, and it does seem clear that candidates more and more speak in this kind of language and talk about we and our family, not in the way that they always have. You know, we've trotted out the family to be a backdrop in a picture, but in a way that shows. I think that the candidates and their partners, to a great extent, really do work together much more publicly. I suspect it always went on. I mean, we know stories about Edith Wilson and certainly about Eleanor Roosevelt, but, you know, it was often, I think, pushed away. Now it's embraced. I think it's a clear sign that when you elect presidents these days, I think you really are at the stage of electing a team where both members are very active.
Thank you, Lori. Ron in Milwaukee is with us now. Hi, Ron.
Hi, good morning, Joyce. I'd just like to say that I really enjoyed, or if I can use that word, the Edwards interview. However, my impression was that they both handled themselves very well during this interview, and I thought were quite gracious and showed considerable restraint. As Katie continued, I thought almost to belabor this point. So I thought in that sense they showed themselves to be very constrained. And then also I thought that it was wonderful that they could focus on serving their country. I thought that was the message that they wanted to get across. And that yet in doing that, they were very realistic. I thought they were faith-filled and realistic. And I think for Americans could serve as models of how to continue living in the face of challenges and great difficulties. So I thought they came across very well, and I don't think that this should harm the campaign at all. And I would hope that it would recede, you know, from the public discussion after a while so that we could get to other issues. And then I just wanted to add that I think also that the fact that Hillary is a woman should also not be a particular issue. I think we should look at her voting record and see if, in fact, she is going to offer any great alternative to what Bush is currently offering. And so I think that also should be a focus. So yeah. I thought I'd add that.
Well, all right. Thanks, Ron. But we're going to focus on the Edwards during this hour for the most part. You agree with Ron's assessment on how they handled themselves in that interview, Professor Redlosk?
I think so. I think this, you know, again, it's not that I have necessarily special insight into them, but it's clearly, it has to have been clearly an intensive experience over these last few days. And to sit down at that interview, in the first place, of course, we expect that anymore, and you know, the public wants to hear. But I think that that Ron's exactly right. I think a lot of people's responses have been very, very much that whether or not you might actually support John Edwards for president, you can't walk away from that without feeling a sense of sympathy, but also a sense of strength that was there. And these kinds of feelings, this idea of emotions in politics, is really, really very important, not just to this, but to politics in general. We have a tendency to think that that when we're casting our votes, we're giving real serious thought to things, and many of us do give serious thought. But our feelings play a tremendous role here, and I think in the end, that's part of why it's so hard to figure out where this is going politically for them. And at times it feels very uncomfortable to even think that we're talking politically about something like this.
Yeah, and yeah, it is a little bit odd, but the politics will play into this, in that fundraising is such a huge part of running for any office, including president, that there are some who say that maybe this will hurt Edwards' ability to raise money, because people think that eventually he's going to be withdrawing from the race because of his wife's health.
Yeah, and that's you know, that political calculation is a little bit scary from the Edwards standpoint, just because the money does matter right now. Now, I think, however, the national media is overstating the money issue at this stage of the game. Yes, it matters, but given that Iowa, New Hampshire, the Nevada caucuses remain at the front end, you do not need huge amounts of money to contest those. You need strong organization. You need to build support precinct by precinct. And if you do that and you show the strength, then in the next week or two, the money will literally flow in.
We are talking with David Redlosk. He is an associate professor of political science at the University of Iowa, talking about the decision by John and Elizabeth Edwards to continue his presidential campaign after it was learned that Elizabeth Edwards' breast cancer has spread to her bones. So how, if at all, does this make you view John Edwards as a presidential candidate? 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. Do you think he and she made the right choice? I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. It's 7:36 on this Tuesday morning, March the 27th, and we are talking about the decision of John and Elizabeth Edwards to proceed with his presidential bid.
She said to me, "This is what we believe in. This is what we're spending our lives doing. It's where our heart and soul is, and we cannot stop." The doctor came in, and I said, "I need to know. We have a tough decision to make. We know what we want to do, but I need to know whether Elizabeth can physically do this. And I don't mean physically stay at home and watch me do it. I mean, can she physically do it? Go out on the campaign trail, do all the work that needs to be done, because the country's going to want to hear from her." And I knew that. And the doctor said, "Yes, she absolutely can physically do it."
You know, you really have two choices here. I mean, either you push forward with the things that you were doing yesterday, or you start dying. That seems to me your only two choices. If I had given up everything that my life was about, I let cancer win before it needed to. You know, maybe eventually it will win, but I let it win before it needed to, and I just basically start dying. I don't want to do that. I want to live.
And Elizabeth Edwards made her first solo public campaign appearance yesterday in Cleveland following the announcement of the return of her cancer, the breast cancer she had spread to her bones. And she said that the outpouring of sympathy that she has received is making it easier to deal with the news, and said, "You can't stop when people are cheering for you." So we welcome your questions, your thoughts on this decision, and your views on the bid of John Edwards and his wife, Elizabeth, the decision to stay on the campaign. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. Our guest is David Redlosk. He's an associate professor of political science at the University of Iowa. And our next caller who's been waiting is David in Wausau. Hi, David. You're on the air.
Hey, good morning, Joy. Good morning, David.
Good morning.
Wonderful program. I watched the Katie Couric interview, and I'm sorry, I have to take advantage of this being on the air. And what did they do to her eyebrows? Did they feel like they had to make her into a Vulcan so people would take her more seriously?
Didn't notice it, David.
Oh, man, I noticed it the first day. Anyway, I watched the interview. My first comment is, I, too, like a previous caller, was wondering how many times Mrs. Edwards was going to have to say, "Well, Katie, what guarantees do you have that you're going to live through this week?" Mm-hmm. But the comment that I talked to your screener about is, I think it is no more plausible to argue that his capacity to serve will be diminished than it is to argue that George Bush's capacity to serve would be enhanced had he had a terminal illness in his family. And I'll let you guys go wherever you want with that.
Yeah, where do you want to go with that, Professor Redlosk?
Well, I read what David's saying to suggest that the cancer itself specifically isn't really the issue in terms of whether John Edwards can or cannot be the kind of president that this country wants and needs at this point. You know, I think there's some truth to that. We all have challenges in our lives, and now, you know, not suggesting that we shouldn't be especially careful about the people we pick for president and the things that they have going on, but everybody faces challenges, and I think this is sort of what the Edwards have been saying as well, and you push forward or you don't push forward, but you know, being the president of the United States, of course, is an incredibly difficult position. It's a, you know, you're always, always on. You always are responsible. Clearly, distractions can be a challenge, but I doubt highly that there's any president that hasn't had distractions. So I think what we're dealing with really here is the question of, can John Edwards, as president, govern in the way a president needs to? Can he appoint the kind of people around him who really carry out the day-to-day work of the presidency, and can he manage that process in light of the situation with Mrs. Edwards? And in the end, of course, every voter has to make that decision for themselves.
Thank you, David. Linda in Appleton is with us now. Hi, Linda.
Hi there. Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Okay. I guess I got in a little late on the conversation. I thought it was really silly that people were even talking about the fact that, you know, what this impact is going to mean. Should they run? Shouldn't they run? I mean, they're obviously two intelligent people. They've obviously talked this over sensibly and came to the decision that this is the best thing to do for them. And in regards to what your guest just said, I agree. And to the point discussing everybody has distractions, sometimes I think it's easier for the people that have, you know, the big cancer, or they have a handicap. It's visible to the world. They can see it. They can understand it. They can empathize. There's all these people going through life that have significant problems that aren't visible to the world, and sharing it with the world isn't appropriate. I think they almost have it tougher than somebody in this situation. That's my take on it. I say run or don't run, it's their decision, and it isn't going to impact whether I vote for him or not. I'm going to look at the important things in front of them and if he can deal with it. I'm sure he can. This isn't going to impact whether a president can do this job or not.
Yeah. Professor Redlask.
You know, in the end, we may see a little bit of a bump up here as our polling is seeing and as some other polling, I think, is beginning to see. But I don't think it's sympathy, and I don't think it's a matter of, oh, gosh, you know, let's support this guy because of the problems. I think, as Linda says, people are going to make decisions in the end in the ways that they always make decisions about something like president. They, you know, to more or less, people try to learn something and try to fit that into what they conceive of as what the country needs, and they make a choice that way. I suspect, actually, that the bump up we're seeing in polling and here in Iowa and on some of the national stuff is actually more a matter that we've now had the Edwards in the news pretty consistently since last Thursday, and people respond to that kind of thing. That is, when the media spend a lot of time on one particular person or one particular issue, people pay more attention to that particular person or issue. I think as we start seeing the media going back to the more typical campaign coverage, people will be able to get back into the mode of trying to understand the candidates for who and what they are. And I agree in a sense that this will fade somewhat in the background in the sense that there'll be plenty of other things going on.
Hmm. Linda brings up an interesting point about how you could presumably be, you know, running for president or running for first lady or first spouse with some sort of health condition or disability that we don't see or know about. Was it necessary for the Edwards to publicly announce the reoccurrence of her cancer?
I think in this day and age, it was. It's easy to forget, for example, that John Kennedy had debilitating back problems, but it was certainly not talked about publicly. And, of course, Franklin Roosevelt was more or less confined to a wheelchair. It's just the public didn't know it. But we're in a different time, and we're in a time when the personal has become part of the political. And so I think that would have made it difficult not to say something. Furthermore, just on a really practical basis, John Edwards cut short a visit here in Iowa to go back to North Carolina. And at that point, you have to explain something. So I think you're better off, and I think the campaign is better off, just in effect coming completely clean rather than playing it a little bit coy, only to know that eventually it would be out there anyway.
Yeah, and I think he did make a previous statement that his wife's health would be the only reason why he may not run or might withdraw.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah. David Redlask is an associate professor of political science at the University of Iowa. We're talking about the impact of the announcement that Elizabeth Edwards, her breast cancer has reoccurred, and the decision by the Edwards to continue on with the presidential campaign. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. We welcome your thoughts and questions about this and whether you view John Edwards any differently as a presidential candidate in light of this news, whether you think they made the right decision or not. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. 14 minutes before 8 o'clock, coming up after 8, should the U.S. counter the WMD threat and terrorism by toppling regimes? We talk with a guest about the topic of regime change coming up after 8 o'clock. We're talking about presidential politics during this hour, and specifically the decision by Elizabeth and John Edwards to continue on with his presidential bid in light of her reoccurrence of cancer. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. A new USA Today Gallup poll out today shows that Americans by 2-1 support the decision by Senator John Edwards to stay in the Democratic presidential race, even with his wife's medical condition. However, that poll also found that a third of those surveyed believe that Edwards will eventually be forced to withdraw from the campaign because of her illness. We are talking with a guest from the University of Iowa, David Redlosk, an associate professor of political science there. He and a colleague also did some polling, and at least now in Iowa, it appears the announcement has not created a problem, at least not for now, for John Edwards among registered Iowa voters or likely Democratic caucus attendees. Remind us, Professor Redlosk, what your poll showed.
What we're seeing is that before the Edwards announcement, the folks that we polled before the Edwards announcement who are likely to attend their caucuses, Edwards had 30% support and Clinton had 24%, Obama 22%. Since the announcement, Edwards' support ticked up to 36%. Clinton's has also jumped up to 34% and Obama has dropped to 14%. We're not quite sure yet, because we haven't looked completely into this, about what's going on the Clinton side, but it's quite clear to us that the Edwards announcement has certainly not hurt him among likely caucus attendees, and if anything, he's doing a little bit better. We also found that about actually 88% of our respondents had actually heard of this, so it's out there with virtually everybody at all levels of education and awareness.
And I don't mean to take the focus off of our topic, but the Governor Vilsack's endorsement of Hillary Clinton just yesterday had no part in this poll.
No, because the numbers I'm reporting today are through last Sunday.
Yeah. Artis in Delafield is with us now. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. He was always one of my favorite candidates. I'm hoping that as part of their decision-making process, that they're looking at the worst-case scenario at the outset of this thing, because once the momentum gets going, you know, there's going to be a lot of us that are, you know, I would be very easy knowing, you know, that he was going for it, and I would certainly be even happier if I woke up and he was president, and I don't want to see it happen where they're thinking, you know, we'll think about that later. Right now, we're going to do this. I think they need to think of the worst-case scenario now and decide what to do. And if they decide that they're going to go ahead with this and make, you know, unfortunately, there's going to be some sacrifices if the worst thing happens. But I would respect that decision if he does. And that's what I have to say.
Thank you very much. A reaction, Professor Redlosk?
Yeah, I think this is a really important point. That is that the thought that hopefully as they're considering what happens next and as they're considering John's continual run, you know, are they thinking about what, you know, what really could happen? And you know, I think it's pretty clear that they are. I think the interview, it comes through, Elizabeth in particular comment about, and John, you know, that you don't really know what's going to happen. None of us, I think it was John, said none of us know what's going to happen. And so in that sense, there's a realism about this. At the same time, you know, this is, you obviously imagine being in that position that you hope that the worst doesn't happen, and it might be fairly easy to sort of think along those lines. These are two very optimistic people in general, despite the things they've been through. But, you know, without sort of pretending I know their psychology self, I think you're really balancing two extremely difficult choices. Do you continue running for president, which, of course, is an all-consuming activity? You know, even if the worst might happen and you know it could happen, or do you cut back and think about, you know, what time do we have left? And in the end, of course, they've made the decision.
Yeah, and it certainly was their personal decision to make, but I will share with you some of the debate that we've had right here at Wisconsin Public Radio. One of our co-workers here was, you know, I think thinking, boy, you know, if this happened to me, I would want to be spending time at home with my family, with my children, not out and about on the campaign trail. And I can't believe that they're doing this, and almost blaming John Edwards for making his wife do this.
Yeah, and that's not an isolated mm-hmm. feeling. I think, interestingly enough, one thing that to insert a little academic stuff into this, one thing that folks who study decision making suggest is that we tend to overestimate how we're going to think about something in the future. That is, we think something that will make us feel happy will make us feel really happy. We think something that will make us feel badly will make us feel really badly. Mm-hmm. And then when the time comes and the event happens, it turns out not to be as extreme as we predict it will be. And so what I mean by this is the idea that those of us who aren't faced with this in our own lives right now make a prediction about how we think we would feel if we were faced with
right.
it. And the research shows those predictions are often quite wrong. They're quite extreme compared to what really happens when something actually happens to us. So I think your colleague there is saying the same thing that a number of people are thinking. But what has struck me is how many people who themselves have cancer, have been cancer survivors, or have had a close personal friend or relative with that, who have had sort of less extreme reactions.
Yeah. Let me share this email from Kay. 2 weeks ago, my 89-year-old mother received the same diagnosis as Elizabeth Edwards. The doctors at Mayo told her that in 6 weeks she would be back in her garden, and then it is just a matter of managing the illness. If Elizabeth Edwards had diabetes, another long-term chronic illness that could cause a fatal condition, would we be having this discussion? The C word has too much power. You want to react to that?
I think Kay has mm-hmm. sort of hit the nail on the head about this particular situation. There's something about the idea of cancer that really does scare us
mm-hmm.
in a way that, particularly those of us who don't have it, in a way that other both acute and chronic illnesses don't seem to. And I think part of it is, of course, if you're of a certain age, cancer was a virtually immediate death sentence when it was diagnosed, and you know, people knew people who died within weeks. The state of medicine, of course, is such that while it may be, in fact, a death sentence, it may be many, many years. And all of us can kind of look around and think about people we know who, in fact, are living full lives despite cancer. But I think that Kay is right. It carries its own weight in a way that many, many other things, and I think the diabetes example is a good one, just don't seem to.
Yeah. Another Kay in Madison, a caller this time. Hi, Kay.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I have a very quick comment. Perhaps I'm more cynical about the general population as a whole, but I think that this will have an effect only to the extent that the same way people would or wouldn't vote for Hillary Clinton because she's a female, they wouldn't vote for would or wouldn't vote for Barack Obama because he's an African-American or because he's charming and handsome and charismatic. They would vote for George Bush because they think, oh, I can have a beer with him. He's a regular guy. I don't think people look hard enough at the issues and look at where the candidates stand on the issues and make their decision that way. I think it's a much more personal thing. So I think that's the kind of effect that I see this having. They either will, their sympathies will go with them and they'll vote for them, or they'll say, ooh, we can't have a first lady with cancer, and they'll vote against him. And I'll take my comments off the air. Thanks.
Interesting. Professor Redlask?
Yeah, well, Kay is right, of course. There are actually a range of people out there, some of whom give a lot of thought to a voting decision, some of whom give relatively little. It is clear in the political science research that voters incorporate not just the issues of the day or their perceptions of the issues of the day, but they also incorporate the personal into the decisions, their feelings about the candidates on a personal level. And we've got a really unusual environment this time, a black man, a woman on the Republican side, someone who's a Mormon, and now, of course, the cancer situation, where so many personal things are going to play a significant role. In the end, though, people really are guided an awful lot by what they hear in the press. And the more the press focuses on issues, the more people focus on issues. But if our press focuses more on the horse race and more on the personal, so will the voters.
We're almost out of time, but I want to get Karen in Rolling Stone, Minnesota. Very briefly, Karen, go ahead.
Yes, I'm a breast cancer survivor myself, and I realized that from talking with many other friends who've dealt with the same disease, it helps you to focus your priorities. I think that the Edwards family are people who have their priorities straight. They know what's important to them. They are not about to just give up because now she has another diagnosis. I admire them for that. I was thinking back this morning about the many presidents that we've had who were good presidents who dealt with lots of family issues. Abraham Lincoln came to mind.
Yeah, and we'll have to leave it there, Karen, because we're almost out of time. The last 30 seconds, Professor Redlosk?
I think that Karen's point about focusing priorities is one that is worth all of us keeping in mind, both in terms of our own personal lives if things happen. But when it comes to the Edwards, it's clear their priority, as they see it, is public service. Mm-hmm. And so to keep it focused on public service probably is the very best thing for Elizabeth to do.
Thank you so much for being with us.
Happy to do it.
David Redlosk, Associate Professor of Political Science at the University of Iowa. Thanks to Leo Duran for producing this hour. Thank you for listening and for calling in. I hope you stay tuned. There's much more to come. I'm Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.